Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on June the 18th, 2015, in the evening. The Orioles, earlier this afternoon, failed to sweep the Philadelphia Phillies in a 2-1 loss, but they took 3 out of 4, which still ain't bad. I am joined once again by my podcasting partner in crime, who I just want to note I have optioned to Frederick because I can. He's Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
Well, I feel good. I'm upset that my routine is being interrupted, and I'm not sure this is highly irregular, Mark.
Grossly irregular.
Gross.
Grossly irregular was the Scott Boras summation of that whole situation.
My agent will be calling you in the morning.
I don't doubt it. I do not doubt it.
But otherwise, yeah, I'm doing pretty good.
So we're here again for you, and the Orioles have been pretty good since we last spoke to one another while you were listening, and that's been fun. I didn't think this team really had a hot streak in them, and then they went and had a hot streak.
Indeed. I was surprised myself, but, you know, they haven't been playing the best of teams. But, hey, winning is winning. You got to beat up the bad teams if you're a good team.
They've won, what, 11 out of 13 here?
Was that before today?
That was before today, so make that 11 out of 14.
Yeah.
Bringing them from 6 games under 500 to 2 games over, which is a good swing to have in the span of about 2 weeks, for sure.
Definitely. So they, I mean, I guess they won series against the Indians. The Indians are pretty good, not very, you know, kind of in the middle. And then they won the series against the Yankees, which was big because the Yankees are ahead of them in the standings. So
the way the games are shaken out right now, and we are recording this about 9:30 on Thursday night, it looks like the Orioles will end the day 3 games out. The Rays are leading the Nationals. The Blue Jays are beating the Mets at the moment, so they'll probably be in 4th place in 3 games out. But that's 3 games is pretty close. You're in striking distance in 3 games.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, until August 1st, I think I just look at the standings just to distract myself. But I think that's when it starts really start mattering.
Right. So much can happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this time last year, Toronto was leading the division, and they ended up in, whatever, 3rd, I guess, probably. 3rd or 4th. So it's just, you know, obviously, like almost everyone in the division except the Red Sox is on a crazy hot run right now, which is kind of frustrating.
Red Sox getting consumed with the kind of drama that I loved the Red Sox being consumed by.
Oh, it's the best.
If you've been following the news, you probably heard sometime on Thursday about Pablo Sandoval getting benched for one game because apparently he was taking a dump in the middle of a game, and he had his cell phone, and he was liking pictures of some woman on Instagram.
So good.
That is so perfect. That is so perfect. That's your $95 million signing by the Red Sox, Pablo Sandoval.
Who's been terrible.
Been
and then
pretty bad defensively, for sure.
Yeah. And then everyone in the Boston media is just killing, laying Hanley Ramirez to waste.
I mean, that's
his,
like, fried chicken and beer part two right there.
Oh, nothing. I don't know. Fried chicken and beer can be tough.
That's true, because this is just a lone incident. It's not like there are a bunch of guys.
It's just funny because, like, it's Boston, so you know stuff like this is gonna like get blown out of proportion. And two, like when they're losing, when they were supposed to be really good, just like, you know, if you're winning and you do this, it's like a weird character thing. And then, like,
having it top fried chicken and beer would have to be if, like, Dustin Pedroia and David Ortiz were in the clubhouse, like, swiping on Tinder during the game or something game. That would be pretty glorious.
That would be great. That would be great.
Well, if only because Pedroia and Ortiz getting taken down a peg is something I would greatly enjoy.
Ortiz is getting killed, too, because he's a jerk.
And not doing so hot.
Yeah, and he gets mad when he gets benched, when he's hitting like 100 against lefties this year. Well,
let's hope they stay down in the cellar and continue to have ridiculous drama that's awesome to the non-Red Sox fan.
Yes, it is.
So speaking of drama, let's hope we're not going to have any drama in Orioles land over this Wei and Chen Frederick business, because I don't get the sense, well, obviously we have competing narratives, because some individual who maybe wasn't Wei and Chen took to his Twitter account. Twitter account that had never before spoken in English, really.
Yeah, I would say definitively it is not Wei and Chen.
I feel like it probably was not his translator either, like if they were driving to Frederick or something. I don't imagine it was also his translator, so.
He never tweets, and he never tweets in English, and then right after this, right after this incident, it's two controversial tweets in English.
And of course, Buck Showalter tried to deflect it, saying, was it Chen or was it his agent? And maybe it was his agent. I don't know. His agent, of course, is Scott Boras.
It reeks of Scott Boras. It's 100% him.
Scott Boras, who is also the agent of Chris Parmalee, who was brought up when they optioned Chen.
Yeah. And a bunch of other guys. And the Orioles first
and
round.
And the Orioles first round draft pick, DJ Stewart, yeah.
Everybody. Scott Boras represents a lot of players because he's the best at his job.
He is a tree with branches all over baseball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, if I was a player, I'd sign with Scott Boras too.
Yeah, he's going to get you the most money for the most part, until you get to the point where he's like you're Steven Drew and he's screwing you out of stubbornness over the qualifying offer. But that's way down the road. If you reach that point, you've probably done okay as a player. Financially already, anyway.
Yeah.
No, but for real, I mean, it's probably a non-controversy, and
I would think so. I mean, the thing is, I don't see how it tangibly affects Chen in any way, and it would seem to me it's like just one of those things that Buck sat him down, explained to him what's going on, explained to him what's happening, and say, you know, go hang out in Baltimore for 9 days and then drive to Frederick and throw 4 innings and you'll be back.
Right, buy him the post-game spread for that one game and then peace out.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if this might be the banner of the Dan Duquette regime.
I mean, he's pulled off some moves before, like the annual Wei and Chen gets optioned to the Gulf Coast League in August so they can expand the roster like one day earlier.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, that's a pretty
Gonzalez and Norris at the All-Star break.
Yeah, but this one, I mean, because it's just like, well, go to Frederick. Yeah. And also they can bring up an outfielder who hit 2 home runs in the first game after they brought him up and homered the next day, too. So, I mean, that couldn't have worked out any better for Dan Duquette as far as that goes.
Like
he endures about 3 hours of everybody like, oh, my God, the Orioles, blah, 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 and this is, you know, an egregious taking advantage of the rules, and then he's probably just sitting there with, like, well, I imagine he was just cackling madly. Maybe he was just smiling.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. this doesn't cost Chen any money, right? I mean,
it doesn't. I believe I read that he would have to be down for 20 days for it to affect his salary, and it sure sounds like they're only planning to have him be down for 10, yeah. So it won't matter.
I guess the only thing from if I'm Chen and from his standpoint is when they sort of say he's suffering from, what was it, general fatigue?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going into free agency and your team says, oh, you can't be pitching every day or every 5 days for the whole season, maybe that hurts you, but I don't think a team is going to care. I don't think Dan Duquette and his weird roster machinations is going to scare somebody away from giving Chen any money.
Right, because, I mean, really, if you're a team and you don't feel like that's a problem about Chen, then that's better for you. If other teams are like, oh my God, what if Chen has all these problems? Because then it gives, you know, the team that's giving him a proper valuation gives them the leg up on getting him. So
yeah,
I don't know that I buy that.
No, I mean, I guess
as being a concern, or that even they needed to worry about it.
I don't know if they did either. I mean, I guess they. I think it's totally that they just don't want to make a decision on Parmalee, and they probably just have to make an excuse to option him to AAA.
Because it looks like the Orioles are basically buying themselves 10 days to evaluate their outfielders and figure out who is going to get designated for assignment.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically it's 10 days to. Like you said, evaluate their outfielders or wait until someone gets injured.
Because how it's probably, that's true. You could have an injury, real or pothole related, over that 10 days. But so what's probably going to happen is Mike Wright is going to start on Friday in Miguel Gonzalez's spot. And then they've said Kevin Gausman will start on Saturday, which is a separate issue we will probably get to later in the podcast. So they have to activate Gausman, which probably means they'll option Wright.
Yeah.
So that gives them until the 25th before they need to make another move, when they're going to probably bring back Gonzalez, at which point they can probably option Tyler Wilson.
Yeah.
So then it's you activate Chen, or you bring Chen back up, and then you probably cut an outfielder at that point. Probably.
Probably. Or
a DL move.
You could option Gausman and still go with a six-man bullpen, but I doubt they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's probably by the 26, they're going to have to figure out what the hell they're doing.
So you basically are saying, okay, they need to decide, who do they like least out of probably Travis Snyder, Chris Parmalee, Nolan Reimold, Delman Young. Maybe you can throw Steve Pierce into that, make it a quintet of potential.
David Lowe, did you say him?
I didn't say David Lowe, just because I feel like they want to keep him as the fourth outfielder / speed, who's not really good at stealing bases off the bench / possible center field fill-in, as in the last four games.
I guess that's his one strength, is he can pitch in at center field. I guess you're right. I don't see them cutting him. I guess you're talking five guys for what? What'll probably end up being three spots, four spots.
Yeah, I mean, they're always going to be juggling those roster calls.
Until Scope comes back, it'll probably be four guys out of the five.
Right, and maybe another one of them will get cut down when Scope comes back. Because I don't imagine they're going to option Flaherty, because, one, he's doing pretty well for himself, and two, he does have a lot of flexibility in what he can play.
Yeah, I mean, I like Flaherty. I like Flaherty for the same reason you like Lowe as a bench player, and that,
Well, don't say, I wouldn't say that I like Lowe as a bench player, but I understand what he brings to the team in the way he's used.
Yeah. He brings a level of versatility that the other players do not have.
Yes, that I will agree with.
Yes, so. I mean, I guess Paredes would be another option to go.
Yeah, he's definitely cooled off.
Yeah, and really, he's probably a guy that shouldn't bat against lefties. So you kind of have like a platoon DH, which, maybe you want to keep around. You're probably going to face more righties than lefties, so.
We saw what happens when you put Paredes in the field within about two innings and the blowout.
It was the first play, right?
Yeah, it might even have been the first play. So, they brought him out from DH to third base, just whatever, because it was a blowout. And then he made an error within very short order.
Yeah, he's terrible in the field. I remember when they even tried him in the corner outfield in spring training. I was watching the game. I mean, he looked like a drunk Delman Young.
Not that sober Delman Young looks the greatest out there to begin with.
No, except he wasn't yelling racial slurs like drunk Delman Young.
Oh boy, we went there.
Delman can't avoid his past.
That's true.
So you're looking at one of the, I guess, and I don't see who they're going to cut out of those five.
Because, I mean, you could make the case that they could have gotten rid of any one of those guys before now, and they haven't yet.
Yeah.
Because really, they could have just made their decision on that right now and not done this whole Chen business. Although that does bring us to the one possibly rational reason for it, which is that the Toronto Blue Jays basically are collectively a Hall of Fame level player against left-handed pitching this season.
Yeah.
They've got like an 876 OPS against lefties.
Yeah, they just kill lefties. And I think Chen has only ever made four starts against the Blue Jays in his career.
Yeah, I looked at that. And he's like 11, 14, and 16 starts against the other three teams in the division. So it seems like
they skip him.
Yeah, it seems like this isn't the first time they've nudged him away from pitching against the Blue Jays. It's just this is probably the most blatant of the attempts to avoid that.
Yeah, before it's just like, oh, we're just going to give them some rest. We got an off day here or something like that. This is like, we actively don't want you to pitch for
and
us.
His numbers in the four games were not good. I believe it was like 5.4 ERA in the four games.
If you think about their lineup, I mean, Bautista, Encarnacion, Donaldson, Russell Martin.
Right, this year it's like even more pronounced.
Yeah. All right-handed hitters.
Donaldson and Martin were two good off-season acquisitions for them.
Why did the Athletics have to trade him to the Blue Jays, Josh Donaldson? So frustrating. He's so good. And now I have to watch him play in a Blue Jays uniform for whatever.
Yeah, he's got like 4 years. He's got. I looked on Baseball Reference earlier. He's not a free agent until after the 2018 season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to have to – I think he was a Super 2 guy, so they're going to have to pay him 3 more years of arbitration, but whatever. He's got a 3.8 FWAR. We're not even at the All-Star break, so you're going to be glad paying that if he's performing at that level.
100%. It's just the
17 home runs in 67 games.
All I had to do was trade crap-ass Brett Lurie for him. Brett Lurie is a crazy person who is also not good at baseball.
Yeah, I don't know if any of those other guys they gave up end up mattering, but
I guess the one prospect, Franklin Barreto, he was like the prospect that may or may not be good.
Well, okay, so good luck with that, Athletics, because their other moves sure weren't working.
No,
Athletics presently 29-40, 11.5 games out.
I think their bullpen has been, like, legendarily awful.
That'll definitely be a problem for a team that wants to contend, for sure.
Yeah.
Although they have given us Pat Venditti. Although he's hurt now.
Yeah, he's hurt now. He's got a bum right shoulder. But,
Wow, well, that is legendarily bad bullpen. Just rattling off some numbers off of the Fancast board. You had, I don't know if some of these guys have been optioned or DFA'd since putting up these numbers, but you got 16 2/3 innings from Fernando Abad with a 5.4 ERA, 24 1/3 innings from Dan Otero with a 6.29 ERA.
Oof.
You've got Kendall Graveman, who was one of the, oh no, that's a starter number.
Yeah, he's a starter now.
You got Fernando Rodriguez, who's pitched 15 1/3 innings with a 4.7 ERA.
Yeah, well, that mean Venditti was like the sixth guy they've called up this year or something like
they
that.
They have used 22 pitchers already.
Yeah, so they've churned through some bullpen arms. You know, so, I mean, having a bad bullpen is a tough way to watch a team.
Yeah, yeah.
So my heart goes out to you, Athletics fans.
Only so far.
Because
I only care about other teams so much, but
yeah. You know, and I hate when they have to play in that stadium.
There is a level of pity that I feel for those guys.
It is the dumbest of all stadiums.
So we've resisted up until this point hitting the panic button on Adam Jones. The fact is he didn't play in four straight games.
Was it four?
Yeah, he didn't play in this whole Philly series, did he? Maybe he played in the first game. I don't know. I've already forgotten, even though it was Monday.
I thought.
Oh, he did play on Monday, excuse me. He just missed three straight games, but he also missed a couple consecutive games not too long before that.
Yeah, that's true. And they're kind of just saying, again, like Chen's general fatigue. It's sort of just general soreness. Part of me is just like, well, Buck knows it's the Phillies, so might as well get him rested for the Blue Jays series.
I think there might have been some of that at play.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, we were talking about it before, but the fact that he didn't even pinch hit at all in the last two games seems also bad.
Right, and, they could have used a quality hitter there in the ninth inning today. Well, it'll be yesterday as everyone's hearing this, but... They pinch hit Nolan Reimold for Caleb Joseph, and then when the pitcher spot came up, they pinch hit Wieters. So I feel like if, and maybe I'm reading this wrong, but I think if they wanted to use Jones, they could have pinch hit Wieters for Joseph, and then pinch hit Jones in the pitcher spot, and then even if Jones like hit a game tying home run, it would have been the pitcher spot, and if they didn't want him in the field, they could have just put in the next pitcher, and Jones would have been done his thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's a little worrisome. I mean, you never like the. I remember it was on Monday when he made a dive, and it kind of looked like he sort of jammed his shoulder into the ground.
I believe he kind of indicated it was his shoulder presently giving him some grief. Yeah.
And you don't like that. You don't like shoulder injuries. So, you know, hopefully it's nothing. Hopefully it was just get some rest against the Phillies. So, because we're going into some divisional games here, you know, want him to be good.
Right. But if it turns out they didn't play him because they wanted to keep the back date for disabled list as far back as possible, then it's basically we're in light our hair on fire territory.
That's true. I didn't think about that angle. I guess that's when you're, you know, going to the National League games, you're going to have an extra bench guy, so you can kind of keep a guy on the bench and DL him later. It's true.
Let's hope it's not getting to that.
Let's hope not. It doesn't seem that way, but again, we've talked about it before on the podcast, but the Orioles and honesty about injury and injury recovery timelines don't always go together.
Jones has had a good June, so I don't feel like it's a long-term lingering injury situation hurting him. I mean, I guess it's possible that it is, but he's had a 957 OPS so far in June, including four home runs.
Yeah, I mean, he's been good. He had after a bad May. I mean, it's kind of like the team. He's good again in June. They're good again in June. It's probably not too coincidental.
No, I don't think that it is.
But yeah, if I had to guess, he'll be back tomorrow.
I would be surprised if he's not back tomorrow. But yeah. We should at least be prepared for the possibility that something terrible is going on.
I mean, we're Orioles fans, so you have to be prepared for the possibility
that something terrible. Good grief. So hopefully he's not hurt, and hopefully Jonathan Scope will be back soon also, because...
Yeah, I guess Scope is supposed to go out to Bowie tomorrow / when you're listening to this today. And it seems like his rehab assignment's going to be not a short one.
Right, kind of getting the inkling from reading the Raku Batkos of the world, who are kind of saying, without saying, that it's going to go probably the full 20 days you're allowed to go.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, since he hasn't played since April and they got to make sure he's fully healed, you know, going a good distance there it seems fine, because their big league team is more or less getting by without him.
Even if
that occasionally means Steve Pierce, this surprisingly non-terrible second baseman, is the second baseman.
Yeah.
But they don't need to rush, and they want to make sure he's back to game speed and what have you.
Especially with the knee, because I feel like if he has a setback or something, it's going to definitely be surgery.
Right, and then he's done for the year.
Yeah. So they're definitely going to bring him back slow, but it sounds like from the quotes from him, it sounds like he's feeling good. So I think they'll probably DH him some games, probably give him it second for like play second base like 5 innings, and then go up to 6, 7, 8, 9 kind of thing, and just sort of. If they use the full 20 days, he could be back Thursday, July 9th.
All right, is that pre-All-Star break?
Yeah, so that would mean he could be back for the three games at home against the Nationals right before the All-Star break.
All right. Well, let's see if that ends up happening. It might.
It could be back sooner, you know. It's definitely going to all depend on how he feels. I feel like they probably want him. It's not going to be one of those things where they're just kind of keep him in the minors as long as they can, so they could avoid optioning or DFAing somebody. If he's healthy, they want him back.
Yeah. They're big fans of Scope. I don't think that's someone where they'd screw around with him, although they keep managing to screw around with Kevin Gausman despite seeming to like him, so I don't know. I don't ever know. So we're bringing back up the Gausman thing, and honestly, what are they doing? What are they doing with Kevin Gausman? We had an article on Camden Chat this week by Tyler Young, what are the Orioles doing with Kevin Gausman? It's only more pronounced since then, because since then we found out, he's going to be the starter against the Blue Jays on Saturday. And if you are really wanting to maximize Kevin Gausman's chances of success, why are you bringing him back for his first start of the year against the Blue Jays when they hit all the home runs and he's had home run problems in his career?
I don't know.
Like, it was reminiscent to me of when they rushed him to start on short rest for his first start of the year last year when he'd recovered, when he was still recovering from pneumonia.
Yeah, and they rushed him up to get pitch the Tigers in that day game. I remember that.
And then he gave up like 5 runs in 4 innings or 4 runs in 5 innings, one or the other, and it wasn't a good situation.
Yeah. I don't, it doesn't seem like the ideal situation to bring him back in.
Like, you're jerking around and treating him with kid gloves, and then you're throwing him right to the wolves, and you're bringing him back.
I think, and, you know, they had said before when he was going down with the tendonitis that when he was coming back, he was going to go to the AAA rotation and build up his arm. And now it feels like... They skipped over that part. So I feel like what's probably going to happen is they're going to call him up, he's going to pitch, and they'll probably just option him immediately after that to go pitch in AAA or something. And it's just like, I don't know what the effect is on jerking a guy up from AAA to the major leagues. But it seems like they enjoy doing it with their like top prospects, whereas with a guy like Mike Wright and Tyler Wilson and like their lower tier prospects, they let them just pitch at a level for a year and they move them up the line, which seems like a more conventional way of doing it at least. And for a team that hasn't developed a good starting pitcher since maybe Eric Bedard.
And I mean, Eric Bedard wasn't even very good, which is why it's so funny that he got traded and the Orioles got great pieces.
Yeah.
Good year before they traded him.
So really you're talking Mike Mussina probably as the last good starting pitcher they developed. So, you know, when they take all their prospects and like they've like Gausman went from straight from Double A to the major league rotation, you know, and he's been bouncing back and forth. I don't know. I don't know what the effect is. I don't know if it's positive, negative, or neutral, but it just seems weird. And I don't know why they're doing it with guys that they consider untouchable, apparently.
Bedard actually had a 1.18 ERA plus in his 5 years in an Orioles uniform. I guess I haven't recalibrated remembering that a 3.76 ERA in 2006 was pretty good.
Yeah.
I've started to look back on those days with this lower run environment expectations, and that's actually a fairly impressive number for those days.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, you know, he certainly wasn't Mike Mussina level great, and we sure would have hoped Kevin Gausman could have that potential. And
yeah, I was finally, and then this year, just starting him out in the bullpen made no sense.
Like, that was another one of those things where it was like, oh, they didn't really want to make a decision about who to trade or non-tender out of, like, Bud Norris and Miguel Gonzalez.
Yeah. And, you know, at this point, you know, Norris has not looked – he's been better, but he's looked pretty bad. And then, you know, the only other guy in the rotation that hasn't looked any good is Tillman.
Like, it's mid-June, and Norris is sitting at, like, a 7.5-ish ERA. So, stuff has gone wrong to be having that be the case. Like, you can't blame that on bad luck.
And, you know, I think Bud Norris could be decent out of a bullpen because he's got a good fastball. And if he's just a fastball slider guy, he could be decent. But he'll probably be pretty pissed about it going into his free agent year, getting devoted to the bullpen, but... You know, that's your fault. He should have pitched better.
Do whatever you did last year against lefties and do that again this year instead of freaking throwing a fastball center cut to Ryan Howard and give up a 2-run bomb.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Be nice if he could do that.
Just 95 right down the middle, right at belt high.
The only place Ryan Howard can hit a ball.
Even Ryan Howard is going to take that one into the right field seats. And he did, and the Orioles lost. And that was the story of the game. A story.
Pretty much. A story, yeah. Also, the offense not hitting Sean O'Sullivan.
The game was started by Sean O'Sullivan, who had a 5.4-ish ERA when the day began. And they got 6 hits all game. 4 hits off O'Sullivan.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. If he starts this game and then goes to AAA and sticks in the AAA rotation until they need someone, I guess I'd be okay with that outcome.
Right. No, just no more of this bullpen nonsense. Leave him in a rotation somewhere, please.
Yeah. He's not going to get, I mean, like, he's coming out of the bullpen and just throwing 98 miles an hour, which if you're a relief pitcher, good, do that. But if you have hopes of him being a starter, he's going to have to learn how to use his slider, curve, slurve pitch along with his fastball and his splitter. And he's not going to do that out of a bullpen pitching one inning at a time.
Right. You don't need to get in. You don't need to get your full toolbox out if you're only pitching one inning, because it's got to be your second and third time through the order when you're really working on all that stuff.
So, I mean, I just, yeah. Last year, it was frustrating, but just kind of like a guy with an option on the roster that you're going to just jerk around to jerk around. But this year, it's just been even more over the top, kind of stupid with Kevin Gausman.
Buck is fond of saying that you can't ruin the good ones, but they're sure putting that to the test with Gausman.
Yeah, yes, they are. And, you know, with their other two top pitching prospects, hobbled right now.
Yeah, Bundy also has some shoulder tendonitis going on, and Harvey is probably on the Tommy John road. Maybe
yeah.
not, but he's certainly on the...
Again, it's... Yeah, I'm not a doctor. I have no idea. If he got two opinions from two orthopedic surgeons that he shouldn't have surgery, then I'll trust them, but...
We've seen before
like...
the 6 weeks rest turns into, oops, you need Tommy John.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, yeah. It does seem like that happens way too often, and that sucks. But I'm not gonna pretend I know everything or I remember every case of it not working or working.
In some ways it might be confirmation bias in that you remember the times where it didn't
exactly.
work out and you don't remember the ones where it did.
It's obviously a different place on the arm, but Britton got the PRP and the rest in his shoulder, and that worked out for him.
That's true.
I mean, if he ends up having shoulder surgery, his career is probably way different, because shoulder surgery is one of those things where you recovering from is significantly more difficult.
Right. The prognosis tends to be decent to good for Tommy John surgery, but shoulder surgery, you're basically never the same after.
Basically. It seems like you maybe have a 50% chance of returning to your like sort of same pitcher.
Yeah.
So I guess I get why they do it, because there's even risk with Tommy John surgery. I mean, 100%, there's definitely risk to it. So, but we'll see how that all goes. I just hope they don't mess with Kevin Gausman too much. I mean, I would, if they want to bring him up Saturday and keep him in the rotation in the major leagues, I'd be fine with that.
I would be very happy if that ended up happening. I don't expect it, because I just don't, well, like, if they're going to keep him in the rotation, who are they going to bounce from the rotation? And I don't see them doing that unless,
I mean, it's just...
Unless, like, Chris Tillman gets in the pothole injury level, which maybe he has been secretly injured, and that's why he's not pitching very well. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know.
Because, again, Chris Tillman, if you're sitting here and it's June the 19th and your ERA is 5.58, something has gone wrong there.
Yes.
More than just you've had bad luck.
It's funny, I have, I don't know if you have it or not, but I have an app on my phone called Time Hop, which, like, a year later, it'll show you all your tweets and stuff from what was a year ago. And it's like, all my tweets the last 2 weeks have been complaining about how, from a year ago, were how Tillman was really terrible.
He was not good in April and May last year, for sure, but,
Yeah, even into June, I wrote something about how I thought he was injured last June.
June was when he started to turn it around, really. He had a 3.10 ERA in June of last year.
How has he been this June? I don't really know.
Well, he gave up three runs to the Phillies, which was basically like 1.5% of their total 2015 run production.
That's a fun way to say that.
Yeah, because they went from 197 to 200 in the game Tillman pitched, I'm fairly sure. So that's a little more than 1.5%, actually.
So,
Tillman has a 4.50 ERA in June so far, which is his best month to this point.
But that's bad.
That's bad. He's got 18 innings, so he's basically got bare minimum quality start numbers for June.
Yeah. We'll see how he finishes out June, I guess. I don't know. I mean, unless he's legitimately injured, Chris Tillman's a guy I don't see them making up the magical pothole
no,
for.
No, they're not going to do anything like that for him.
Yeah.
They just need to figure out what's wrong. Probably his command sucks is what's wrong, but why is his command suck is the question.
Yeah.
He's rocking a fairly poor walk rate, especially compared to the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's probably the most scary thing that's happening right now is just his command is garbage. So, yeah, I don't know.
That's a job for Dave Wallace and Dom Chidi, and I don't know anything about what's going on or why. But so last year he had a walk rate. He walked 7.6% of batters. This year so far, and I'm grabbing this from Fangraphs.com, which is a great website, by the way. You should all
all
visit it regularly for your baseball stat needs. So his walk rate for 2015 is 11.6% of batters.
Bad.
So that's he's jumped basically more than 50% over last year's walk rate.
Yes, very bad. So, you know, you just got to hope he finds it. I think he can. I don't think Chris Tillman is done.
Right, I mean,
done being good.
The last 2.5 seasons before this, he's just so consistently good.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that would just abandon him at the age of 27.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys, I guess, if you, like, he breaks FIP, if you want to call it that.
He definitely has broken FIP over the last 3 years.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess if you want to say this is the end of the line of Chris Tillman being good, like, go right ahead, but I'm not going to.
No, I don't think it's that, but he definitely needs to get back to what was making him good.
Yes.
I don't think he's the same Chris Tillman and just suddenly his luck has turned. I think there's something making him not the successful Chris Tillman beyond just, he's got worse BABIP luck, although he does have worse BABIP luck to the tune of about 40 points higher on his batting average on balls in play allowed than the last 2 years. But I don't think that's the... I think that's probably a symptom rather than cause.
Oh, I agree. I think his command's just... I mean, you can just see he's... It's the problem where he always has this sort of issue. Or when he's bad, he does. His fastball, he either jerks it way in glove side, like his glove side, or he, like, it casts, basically, arm side. It just doesn't have, like, a finish, like, where it's straight to the outside corner. And, you know, when you do that, it's just, like, it's a ball right out of his hand. And, you know, I feel like that's something mechanically that he's just, like, missing his release point or something like that, you know. And, you know, he's a big, tall guy. I could see losing a release point for a bit, but you just got to hope he figures it out.
So far, they've gotten along all right, even with Tillman and Norris, for that matter, muddling through, which is in part thanks to Ubaldo Jimenez. Who would have guessed?
Who would have guessed?
Also Chen and also Miguel Gonzalez, all of whom have really pitched well.
All of them have pitched. I mean, Gonzalez, Chen, and Jimenez are putting up all their best years as Orioles, basically.
I mean, none of those guys are really going to be in, like, Cy Young Award contention. But when you're sitting with three guys that have a 3.3-ish or below ERA, which is the case with all of Jimenez, Chen, and Gonzalez in mid-June, you're doing pretty well there. That's a good trio.
It's a good start. I mean, in my opinion, what made them very successful last year was that they had five guys in a rotation with all above average ERAs. So they all had ERA pluses above 100. And, you know, they need to get back to that if they want to, they're looking to win the AL East again.
Right.
It's just the way the sort of team is constructed is that they don't have an ace, but if they have five quality starting pitchers that are above that league average, then you're talking, you know, then you're talking like what we talked about it before, but, you know, their longest losing streak was 4 games, and their longest winning streak was 6 games. It's just kind of, they were able to win 2 out of every 3 for 3 months.
Yeah,
And that, you're gonna
if every starter is pretty much giving you a better than average chance of winning each game,
yeah,
then especially if your offense is good, which the Orioles offense is doing pretty well, even for all that it frustrates us with in May with whatever that stretch of games was where they were scoring 2 runs or less for so long. They're still pretty good overall for the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they're definitely like a top third, top, you know, 25% whatever offense I would think
in the
league.
Just on raw runs scored, it looks like the Orioles are 5th in the AL.
Yeah, and if like you said, if you can have 5 guys above average and a good bullpen with an offense 5th in the AL, I mean you can rack up wins doing that pretty easily. So they definitely need Tillman to get on track and either Norris or somebody else to get the job done.
Yeah, like if it's Bud Norris gets better, if it's Kevin Gausman sticks in that spot, if it's, you know, Mike Wright, whatever, Tyler Wilson, whoever, man, just somebody.
Somebody.
Somebody that's going to have an ERA better than freaking 7.
Yeah, I mean, they...
Or
yeah.
Better than 5.
They can't keep running this Bud Norris out. I mean... if he needs to get the Ubaldo pothole treatment and go work on his mechanics and come back and pitch out of the bullpen or whatever, I don't care. But he can't, you know. I mean, he only gave up 2 runs today, but he wasn't exactly sharp. So, and he hasn't really looked sharp in any of the games I've seen him.
Bud Norris before today had was having a left on base percentage for the year of 54.1%. And basically, if you're doing well, you're going to be at like 75, 80 or more percent, which is,
yeah,
once you let a guy on base, how often do you strand that guy? Like, if you're only stranding 50% of the guys you let on, man, it's like so bad. You can't,
it's pretty bad.
It's really bad.
And some of that could just be bad luck, but he's been bad, so probably not a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm not inclined to ascribe a whole lot of bad luck to the Bud Norris
conundrum. No, I mean, he's just looked bad. He just, his command isn't good. He lost his changeup, so he's got nothing against lefties.
And he has looked pretty bad since starting pitching in spring training, and it's just,
yeah,
was continuous.
Yeah, continuously bad. So I have no idea what they're going to do with him.
He got lit up in, what, 2 of his 3 rehab starts when they had him out with the bronchitis that...
Yep. Twins reject Kenny's Vargas. Took them deep twice in Norfolk, which is hard to do.
So who knows? They need to figure out something about that.
Yeah.
I don't have a graceful segue to the last topic we wanted to discuss tonight, so we'll just move from that, not smoothly at all. We wanted to talk about the draft, which was over a couple weeks ago, but the Orioles are starting to sign the picks now, so it's worth revisiting some of that stuff. And namely, what made the Orioles draft interesting is they really seem to approach it with a different philosophy than particularly their division rivals did, in that every other kind of, you know, the prospect industrial complex writing about the draft was talking about, well, this is kind of a weak high school draft class. And then you got the Orioles scouting director, after he's done his draft, is like, well, we wanted a draft to the strength of the draft, which we felt was in the high school hitting talent.
Yeah.
So, You've got the Orioles very different in evaluating what was good in the draft, and their draft compared to their division rivals showed that, because basically everybody else only had like 2 or 3 high schoolers in the first 10 rounds, and the Orioles had, I think, 7 out of their 11 picks in the first 10 rounds. So they clearly had a different strategy there.
Definitely.
So their first pick was a college bat, DJ Stewart, who... was himself kind of a questionable name. I don't know if we mentioned him in the last podcast where we talked about a few names, but he has this weird crouch.
Yeah, and it appears that at least it's kind of one of those things where this makes sense to me. That's what's worked for him so far in his baseball career. So don't just immediately tell him stop crouching. See if he can be successful doing it. Maybe he can. If he can't and he realizes he can't, then he'll probably try to change.
Yeah.
And you go from there.
The opinion of the kinds of scouts who are getting quoted in like your baseball prospectuses and your ESPNs and whatnot was basically that the crouch is maybe costing him power because it keeps him from driving the ball as much. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But the Orioles don't seem to plan to have him change it initially.
He's kind of got an interesting background in that he was a high school football player. And, obviously if you're a football player and he was a running back, being low to the ground is something you're kind of used to.
Right.
So, if he's most comfortable doing that, and he seems like a pretty good just overall hitter, not just a power hitter, and he seems to have a very good like eye at the plate. So, I think it's one of those things where you see how long he can be successful doing it. And I like the pick. I mean, a college bat is something they haven't drafted in a long time. I guess was Weeters the last one in the
that
first round?
That sounds right. And obviously, they were picking whatever, fourth or third that year. Fourth, I think. And so it was a no-brainer because it was like, oh, Matt Weeters. Well, everybody knew he was one of the best prospects.
Yeah, I think he dropped because of signability stuff.
Yeah, they picked fifth. And all the teams that didn't pick him. Okay, David Price was the number one pick that year. So I think that's fair to say that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But then basically the Royals, Cubs, and Pirates all just didn't want to deal with Scott Boras' bonus demands.
Yeah.
So the Orioles got Weeters.
Yeah, and they'll have to deal with Boras again on this one.
They will. Although I imagine his demands are not as exorbitant as Matt Weeters' bonus.
But I like the pick. I mean, from all the whatever outside prospect industrial complex rankings, it seemed like he was rated right around in that area. Not too big of a reach. There are definitely some questions with him because, whatever, he's 6 foot, 230.
As you mentioned, his running back build, that doesn't lend you to think, oh, this guy's going to be a good outfielder.
No. And I guess some people I've heard anything from average to below average on his arm. So, I mean, you're probably talking a left fielder to be. I mean, yeah, you're probably talking a left fielder, but if he can hit, he can play left field. I'm fine with that. And if he can be, he seemed, from watching videos of him, it seems like he's got average enough speed. And
yeah, and I had never really heard of him or seen him or anything. So this is just from reading different people. But it seemed like they would all say, well, his athleticism is better than you would expect for his frame or something like that. So
yeah, I mean, he's got a big frame. He's a big guy.
He
he's
is
got
a big
a
dude.
Neck. He looks like a football player. But I like the pick. I think it's interesting. I think the college bat's interesting. You gotta like the patience he had at the plate, and I mean, he led all of college in walks.
Oh, see, that I didn't know. I like that.
Yeah, he had like a 500 on base percentage senior year or junior year.
I think we all get frustrated that Orioles don't walk enough. So
seems like he's got a good idea at the plate. The crouch thing, we'll see where it goes. He's like we had talked about before. It's the 25th pick. If he's not a Hall of Famer, I'm not gonna be shocked. If it seems like a guy that could become an everyday major league player within 2 years or something like that, that would be your hopeful timeline.
Like, just think about it. If the Orioles if he moves his way up through the system and like. In 2018, he comes up, and then in like 3 years over after that, he has like a 1.5 WAR season, a 2 WAR season, a 2 WAR season. Like that. So that was, you've done a good job on your 25 pick. If that's
pretty much,
if that's what happens with him. Like,
if you can go out and get yourself an everyday left fielder for 3 or 4 years, you've done good enough.
So whether that happens with DJ Stewart, we'll see. But it seems like that's a reasonable expectation based on what people seem to think.
That would be like, so the timeline for him, he'll probably start in Aberdeen because that's where all the college picks start, or most of them. And he might get bumped up to like Delmarva or Frederick. And then next year he's probably looking Frederick. And then, you hopefully maybe Bowie.
Right, like if he's mashing Frederick, then maybe they'll do the post All-Star break promotion.
Yeah.
Although they've been bumping guys up before the All-Star games this year, which is outside of their usual pattern that I've noticed over the last few years.
Yeah, so something like that. And then, like you'd said, looking like I guess that'd be 2017, 2018, something like that. Like somewhere in there. Hopefully you'd be looking at DJ Stewart, which is the advantage of drafting college players, is that you don't have to wait as long for them.
Right. You're not waiting 4 years as you will for even most of the best high school players. Now, obviously, you get your occasional exceptions with like the Manny Machado,
Bryce Harper.
Guys. Yeah.
That's why those guys are top five picks and not 25 picks or the 25th pick. So, but yeah, the rest of their draft, like you had said, it was pretty interesting. Like the top 10 rounds, seven high schoolers, a lot of high school position players. I guess they already have Ryan Mountcastle signed. He seems like an interesting prospect, sort of, I guess, from where he was rated by the outside evaluators. It was a little bit of a reach, but a guy with really good bat speed and, you know, a good idea at the plate. It seemed like people really liked the way he could hit, but his problem would be finding a defensive position.
Right. So he's a shortstop, but it seems like they don't think he's going to stay.
Yeah. It seems like from what I have read, again, because I can only take what I read about these people, but some people maybe say like third baseman, some people say left field. But again, if you can hit, and you know, bat speed's one of those things that is not a skill that can be learned. So it's interesting. I know one of the Baseball Prospectus swing mechanics guy, Ryan Parker, he's a good follow on Twitter. He really liked Mountcastle. He really liked his swing. So you can take that for what it's worth.
The Orioles, I believe, said they had him in the top 50 on their draft board. So, you know, obviously they liked him more than the industry did. I don't know. I don't have all the people's rankings right in front of me just now, but I wrote an article about it, and I was using the Baseball America rankings, and he was number 122 there. So that's maybe a little lower than you would like when you're talking about they made him the number 36 pick overall.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at some of the Orioles' division rival drafts where the Rays and the Yankees had a number of picks in the top 150 or so, and they got multiple top 100 prospect guys. So the Yankees basically got four top 100 Baseball America names, and the Rays got five of those guys with their early picks. And meanwhile, the Orioles are picking your number 36 pick is like number 122 on Baseball America. Your second round pick was like 255 or something like that. Your third round pick is like 185. And it's like, well, they're not getting these top 100 guys. But I mean, you know, what is the difference between number 170 and 140, really? And, you know, if the Orioles evaluate them better, then we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see who's right.
And, you know, I think the Orioles scouting director, Gary Ratius, I've liked some of his drafts, and he's gotten some good value out of some guys that people thought were reaches. You know, Chance Sisko is a guy some people thought was a reach. Hunter Harvey was a guy some people thought went a little higher than they were going to. And, you know, Harvey's obviously injured, but that's not Gary Rach's problem.
Right, because they got him in the system, and then suddenly it was like, wow, he's turned into a really good prospect. I can't believe he didn't go higher. And that was within like 6 months of his being drafted, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, Cisco's now a Baseball Prospectus had him at 101 on their prospect list. I mean, he was a second-round pick. That's pretty good to turn a top 101 prospect, at least for one organization, from a second-round pick. Because even second-round picks don't end up being much all that often.
They've turned their 2013 third-rounder and 11th-rounder into Travis Snyder. Now, that hasn't worked out maybe as well as the Orioles might have liked, but you could kind of see what they were doing there and hoping for there.
Yeah. And I think from looking at the rest of their top 10, you can kind of see where their strategy was after Stewart, and that, like we had said, they'd gone after some high school guys. They got a couple of the college senior guys to save money. But they got a lot of high school sort of power hitting prospects. So like Jason Heinrich and Seamus Curran and, you know, are definitely like big power guys. So is Mountcastle even.
Yeah, both Heinrich and Curran were described by the complex as basically all or nothing power guys.
Yeah.
And so
which
that's
is
like
something that the Orioles have not drafted a ton of recently.
That's,
so it'll be interesting to see where they go. You know, I mean, if they can, you know, we were talking about how they haven't developed many starting pitchers, but position players has been a struggle as well.
They really haven't developed position players, especially real power hitting position players. Although Machado being the tied for the team lead in home run, maybe is one of them, but
yeah. But so I think it's interesting. And then the one guy that they're going to save some money on other picks and give it to him is Gary Fenter. He's
Gray
a guy with
Fenter.
What?
It's Gray.
Gray.
Yeah.
Oof. Gray Fenter. I thought it was Gary this whole time. Well,
does that change your opinion
Fenter.
Of him now that you know he's named Gray instead of Gary?
A little bit. Gray's kind of a dumb name, but I'll take it. but he seems like an interesting high school guy with a strong college commit, so they're definitely going to have to pay him some money.
Yeah, so the story with Gray Fenter was that basically he only started pitching 2 years ago.
Huh.
So they were saying he has a young arm, but they still like what he's been able to do in the competition since he started pitching.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why he wasn't as highly ranked, but if the Orioles saw him enough times that they felt good about him, then there's maybe a guy who's kind of a steal in the seventh round if he turns into something.
I think every team kind of, or like teams try to target guys like that they can save money on from guys and then focus their efforts on sort of one or two overslot guys. And
so Ryan Mountcastle has already signed for like $400,000 under slot. So that money's getting spread around to some of these other guys. And
yeah, and then Jay Flaw from the sixth round.
North Dakota State University product, Jay Flaw. Like, how does that come up in the draft room, I wonder? Like,
I don't know, you gotta love it.
Even among the pile of senior signs they could have drafted for $10,000 signing bonus right there. How do they settle on, yeah, North Dakota State? I don't know. But then in the eighth round, you had Seamus Curran, as you mentioned, and that was another one of those guys who is probably going to take more than the slot value of $166,400 to sign. Although he's not going to get like $1 million either, I don't think. But maybe it's going to take, you know, $500,000 to get him.
Yeah. We'll see.
So the thing with him was, one, he's in a cold weather state, and two, he had mono his junior year, so he missed a lot of looks kind of build up in that time.
Yeah.
So the Orioles liked what they saw from him in his senior year. And if you were going to have a guy who is an unexpected success story in the eighth round, he'd probably have kind of a story like that where there was some kind of fluky reason about why teams might not have been on him for as long.
Yeah.
Since he had missed a bunch of time.
And he had a big big like piece on him, ESPN Boston. I would recommend reading. It was pretty interesting. It's a hockey player, too. He's a defenseman. I mean, he's 6'6", 240.
His team was in like the state finals or something like that this year.
Yeah.
Something high up there in the Massachusetts state hockey playoffs.
It's another one of those just like, you know, big athletic power guys. But I think
I really enjoyed that article. And
yeah, it was good.
The phrase that stood out to me was that the article described him as a jolly lumberjack with a menacing scowl. The Orioles just need a jolly lumberjack, man. So I'm rooting for him just on the basis of that. I hope he does well and continues to be a jolly lumberjack, because
outside of the top 10 rounds, there was really only one interesting pick, a guy from Maryland, actually, Cody Morris, who he just got Tommy John surgery, and he's considered a pretty strong commitment to South Carolina.
I think they basically said they don't expect to sign him, but they just wanted to give him respect that he's a guy in their backyard. And
yeah, I think it's one of those things, like, if they don't sign, like, Fenter or somebody else, they could just, like, throw a bunch of money at him and see if he signs. But it's probably not going to happen. They'll probably sign Fenter. If they wouldn't have drafted him seventh overall or in the seventh round, if they didn't think they could sign him.
They were sounding pretty confident about signing all of their top 10 rounds guys. Which, of course, in the new system, well, we're going to have to stop calling it the new system eventually because it's been several years now. But in the current system,
well, it's going to probably be completely torn apart again.
That's true. In a system that may not last for long. whatever. If you don't sign one of your top 10 round picks, you lose that money out of your bonus pool.
Yeah.
So there's incentive for teams to sign everyone they draft in the top 10 rounds. And for the most part, you want to feel pretty confident you can do that at the time you make all your picks.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's supposedly, well, it is against the rules to have pre-draft deals, but nonetheless, the system incentivizes pre-draft deals.
Of course. Well, what's the multiple of the Oreos picks had, like, put up pictures of themselves on Twitter or whatever.
Right. Both Mountcastle and the second round guy, Jonathan Hughes, like, the, you know, they had Orioles hats like within minutes of being drafted. So
I'm going to guess they didn't have 30 team caps waiting around.
I'm feeling
around
pretty
house.
Safe in saying they didn't just have a box with every team's hat.
Yeah. They had some idea.
Ryan Mountcastle, in fact, was wearing an Under Armour Orioles shirt with like the Maryland flag colors on where it said Orioles.
Yeah.
So that's even more than just having a hat. That's, you know.
One of my favorite things about the draft is seeing all those videos of the guys getting drafted.
Yeah, and their mom's really crying, cool. And they're hugging their mom, and like all their family and friends are there.
Seems cool for them.
Got to be a great moment.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, I guess the first guy, according to people we could see, is Garrett Clevinger or Clevinger.
His
something
name
like
is
that.
Clevinger as opposed to Steve Clevinger, but I hope we get the Clevinger battery.
Oh, 100%. But he's a lefty from Oregon that my guess is going to be rushed as a bullpen arm, according to, I think, even Gary Rager.
Yeah,
Rager's.
He said that's the guy that they will probably see first in the majors, because they could just plug him in the bullpen and maybe rush him up unless he's bad.
Yeah, which I guess is possible. but otherwise, yeah. I mean, it was an interesting draft. Like you said, they may have reached on some guys, but only time's really going to tell. But people at Baseball America, you know, they've been just as wrong as anyone else over the
years. They're not the ultimate authority. They're a authority you can easily consult to kind of get a rough idea of what happened in the draft. But, you know.
Yeah.
You can overrate guys. Just for instance, Brian Mattis was once very well regarded, which is why the Orioles took him fourth overall. Like, that wasn't like that went out of left field. That was many people highly regarded Brian Mattis, even once he was in the system and was being a prospect, because, you know, he's like Keith Law's number four overall prospect at one point in time. And there was a very glowing scouting report on there talking about how he had four plus pitches and he was going to be a top of the rotation pitcher.
Don't remind
and
me.
So any of these guys can be wrong. Teams can be wrong. The publications can be wrong. Really, I mean, because you're dealing with human beings. You never know really what's going to happen once you draft a guy and get him in the professional ranks. You can have guys who just flame out for no apparent reason, which is kind of your Brian Mattis story. You can have guys who you draft them and they're supposed to be good and they are good. You know, Manny Machado. You can have guys kind of draft them and they just kind of come out of nowhere to be decent players or even good prospects. There's a lot of possible outcomes.
Definitely.
And hopefully with some of these picks, the Orioles get, you know, guys who kind of float up above where you would expect them to be, either as trade bait or even potential Orioles pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the job of a scouting director, is pieces for the team or pieces to trade. Just create those, and now they're in the hands of the development staff, and we'll see if whatever 20 years of not developing a player can turn around.
Yeah, here is hoping they can break that down. And I mean, there's some interesting guys playing in the minors now. There's not like every other team is promoting their guys. You got what, Byron Buxton is up, Carlos Correa is up, and Francisco Lindor is up.
Joey Gallo.
Kyle Schwarber is getting a week trial with the Cubs.
Yeah.
So these are guys that were all drafted pretty high up in their particular draft, and now they're showing up in the majors. And the Orioles don't have one of those guys, but then they haven't had a top five pick since they started being good, which I'm totally okay with. But
totally okay with. I'm fine with wins.
So, like, just for instance, right now, they've had their eighth round pick from 2013, Trey Mancini, who's been promoted to Bowie. He's raking for Bowie. He's been in, like, 10 games there, but he's basically had, like, an 1,100 OPS over those 10 games. So, I mean, it's only 10 games, but that's better than if he got promoted to Bowie and stunk for 10 games.
It is. You know, people say, you know, don't scout the stat line, which is fair, but...
Right, because we don't know if he's getting those numbers against, like, crap pitchers who are nobody.
Yeah, but good results are better than bad results, so... I'll take him just crushing double-A pitching right now over him being terrible against it.
So I don't know that that makes him worth anything as a prospect or whatever. He, you know, probably is a future first baseman, and he'd better be hitting like a first baseman if he's going to be anything. But again, I mean, that's an eighth-round pick. So if he ever become, if he makes the big leagues ever at all, he's beaten the odds.
100%. Yeah, and we were talking about it before, but Mike Yastrzemski is another guy. That was a 14th round pick.
14th rounder from that same draft.
He's, I mean, I haven't looked at the 14th round, but he's probably the best 14th round pick out of that draft. I mean,
Justin Verlander's brother was drafted in that.
Yeah. You know, he's probably the best. He's probably the best guy drafted in the 12th through 16th rounds.
I feel pretty safe in saying that. So, yeah. You know, Yastrzemski kind of got noticed because he got two promotions last year.
Yeah. And he's been pretty decent in Bowie this year, and he's definitely a guy that seems like he could profile sort of like what David Lowe does now.
Right, so Yastrzemski is listed at 5'11", and he's a left-handed batter, so he really could be like what David Lowe is right now.
Yeah.
He's got some speed. What made him interesting, it kind of made him stand out last year, before he got promoted from Delmarva. Now, he's a little old for the low A when he got promoted, but still, he had double-digit doubles, triples, and home runs in 63 games for Delmarva last year, which is why he got kicked up. And then he continued raking in Frederick, which is why he got kicked up again to Bowie, which is where he is again this year.
Yeah, so I think he's definitely And that's another great pick. I mean, 14th round to get somebody like that's impressive.
You know, maybe he won't make the majors with the Orioles. Maybe they'll kind of have him as a throw-in on some trade and, you know, get a big leaguer. Or, you know, maybe he'll be the future David Lowe, which, again, I mean, that's David Lowe is not an impressive Oriole. But if you draft a guy who becomes your next David Lowe, that's one less guy you need to get. Like, even if it's just your fourth outfielder. I mean, the Orioles had to trade Danny Valencia to get David Lowe, and Danny Valencia is not a bad baseball player.
No.
If the Orioles already had a David Lowe, they could have gotten something more from Danny Valencia, or they could have kept Danny Valencia, and, you know, maybe he would be, shoot, I mean, he's probably being used as a platoon player this year, and that's why he has an 885 OPS for the Blue Jays, but, you know, the Orioles could use a right-handed platoon outfielder right now, considering their current options. Basically, Delmon Young and Nolan Reinwald and Steve Pierce.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's when you can create those kind of players rather than having to acquire them, it's a very good thing.
It's one less guy you have to try and dumpster dive from the minor league veteran signings.
Or overpay.
Overpay, or, you know, one less guy you got to trade for.
If you could... They're paying Delmon Young, whatever, $2.5 million. You could probably find a guy, if you were doing the draft, if you're drafting well, you could draft a guy that could do what Delmon Young does for $500,000.
Right, and Delmon Young is making $2.25 million this year, I think, maybe $2.5 million.
So, I mean, it's not, obviously that's not a lot of savings, but...
It's savings.
Yeah, even a guy like, I mean, even Bud Norris, you know, you'd hopefully, if you could create a number five starter, that's $10 million you're saving. So that's it's, you know, it's what the draft is for. It's what you're trying to do. Create players that either have trade value or value to your roster.
And here's hoping the Orioles will get some of those guys out of those lower round guys. They like we said, they really kind of targeted high school players where other teams were going college, and maybe that'll work out for them. But since it's high school players, it'll be a few years before the fruits of that really shows up, if it does show up. Maybe it was a lot of lottery tickets, but maybe one of them will cash in.
Exactly.
And that was the Orioles' 2015 draft, so that was about towards where we want to wrap it up. So, Alex, do you have any final thoughts at this moment? It is 10:46 p.m. Eastern on June the 18th, 2015, as we get to this exact moment. Any final thoughts on the Orioles at this time?
Final thoughts on the Orioles? Not much, you know. It's a big series coming up this weekend. Big for June, at least, because they're facing the Blue Jays, who've been hot, and they've been hot, so it'll be interesting to see how they play. And, you know, they just got to keep chugging along. They've looked good in June. They've looked more like the team I thought they would be this year. So hopefully they go with that. And, you know, we were looking at the schedule. The schedule's a little soft going into the All-Star break, you know, looking at it on paper. So, you know, rack up some wins, get within first place by the All-Star break, and, you know, then when the trade deadline comes, and we can have a bunch of fun with that.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on any of that. I guess we're really too early to start getting rumors season, but
yeah.
I imagine the Orioles will be looking to upgrade something somewhere at the deadline.
Probably.
Hopefully this year they won't give away any Eduardo Rodriguez's for 2 months of a reliever, but...
Hopefully.
I mean, I don't even know who might be out there that they might want, but certainly it doesn't look like they're going to be selling off. Although maybe they'll do more margin trades and have that be all they do, like getting some more Joe Gunkels, who they've had starting. We were convinced, oh, they'll have him be a reliever, and he's made like three starts for Bowie so far.
Yeah, and he's been pretty good for Bowie.
He wasn't
too
bad in his three starts that I've seen. Yeah. So remember,
yeah.
Alex and I don't know anything.
Very true.
Hopefully we can entertain you with our know-nothingness, but...
If you want to know more about the draft, ask almost anyone else. I'm really just an aggregator of news.
That is also what I am. Occasionally, I may have an opinion that has some basis in reality, but we're really kind of throwing darts at a dartboard. So hopefully we can at least be entertaining in our not knowing anything. My final thought is I just want to see Jonathan Scope back, and we'll probably have another podcast before he's back, but I just want him to be back. Cause
yeah.
What I imagine he can provide to the Orioles is a big thing they could use right now.
Yep.
I mean, I shouldn't be overreacting based on his 9 games he played before his injury, but he sure looked like a guy who was had taken the lessons of his first big league season and was applying them to hitting baseball really, really hard.
Yes, he's an exciting young player. The Orioles need some of those, and hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later.
That's what I'm hoping for, too. So that's about all we've got for this evening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. You can follow at CamdenChat. You can follow Alex. He is at AlexConwayCC. Or you can follow me. Honestly, I don't tweet on my own personal one since I have the site one. But if you want to follow me, I am at EatMoreSK. SK, like the hot dogs. And Facebook, we're on Facebook. The commenters are crazy, but maybe you can help them be not crazy. And that we're Facebook.com/CamdenChat. If you like us, I won't say I'll be your friend because I probably won't notice that you like us, but you will hopefully not regret liking us on Facebook. You'll see most of our interesting articles posted on there, so you don't have to necessarily come on the site all the time. It'll come on your Facebook. Although you should definitely bookmark CamdenChat.com.
100%.
I'm extremely awkward doing self-plugs. It's really not a strength of mine. So.
Well, just do not read the comments on the Facebook article.
There's really a lot of bad, crazy people. Although maybe you'll be entertained in a train wreck kind of way. In that case, you should rush to it.
Click on the link and read the comments below the articles because they are usually significantly better.
There are occasional crazies on the actual Camden Chat commenters, but yeah, for the most part, I would like to think we have a relatively lucid group of regular commenters.
Relatively.
I mean, you know, we're all fans, and fan is short for fanatic, so we're all crazy.
Yeah.
And join in on the Camden Chat comments, if you will. You can sign up for an account and say hello. We don't bite. We will probably be very nice. Probably. Unless you're crazy. And then we might not be nice. But you're probably not crazy if you've listened to over an hour of Camden Cast and you do so regularly. So that is all for tonight. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown, and we are bringing you Camden Cast. This is Birdland, and we are out.